I mean, so far what I've been saying that, you know, unemployment, it sounds very depressing, right? Actually, this tariff war that we see currently, it is not something new. The world perhaps is less connected due to that tariff, but then it gets increased connection in other parts of the world. Okay. And so it's not a bad thing at all.
Welcome back to our channel, FHSA Radio. I'm your host, Katin.
And I'm Daniel.
Today, we will talk about something that has been making headlines and maybe making a few people nervous, which is the US-China tariff war.
Oh yeah, it's a big deal. Tariffs, tensions, supply chain shakeups. It's affecting everything from product prices to businesses.
Exactly. Very fortunately, in today's episode, we have got an economics expert here to break it all down. With her, we will go through key events and the similar historical cases and the real economics motivations behind this US-China tariff war.
Yes, let's get into it and see what's really going on. And what does this mean for people and the whole world? Welcome, Wai Heng. It's very glad to have you here.
Welcome.
Okay, thank you very much for the nice introduction. My name is Wai Heng Lok, and I work for the FHSS School of Economics with the University of Nottingham, China.
Thank you, Wai Heng. It's very glad to have you here. So before we get started, we should understand about the tariff and tariff war first. In China, we say tariff in guanshui, which means, for me, it means like the, additional payment of the product. So I don't know, how will Russian understand this tariff in your country?
Well, basically, in Russian language, tariff would be interpreted as a cost for something. For example, the mobile phone tariff is basically how much you pay per month for this tariff or that tariff. So that's basically the price.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, tariff, the word, I'm not that expert in English language,
yeah,
but
yeah.
My understanding of the tariff in English is basically the same as what Russian language will interpret as well. It is basically the price.
Yeah.
You will see, you know, if you're checking for hotel room rates, and sometimes you may see the word room tariff. So it's actually how much you have to pay for it. But in economics, we use the word tariff with a specific definition. And tariff in economics just basically mean import tax. A tax on imported goods, as well as service if they can do so. So it's import tax.
Can I understand it as also the additional payment for the imported goods?
Yes, I think that's right in what you have explained. Additional payment for imported goods. Now imagine when a consumer would like to buy an imported good.
Yeah.
And for example, in China, when they want to buy imported shoes from
America or,
let's say Milan.
Milan, Italian. So these are imported shoes. So imagine that this pair of shoes is produced in Italy and then it goes into China. So there is transportation and as well as the cost of production, making that the nice pair of leather shoes available. And there's a further additional cost of transportation, shipping it into China. So consumers will have to pay for that anyway. And if there is an import tax on that pair of shoes, it will have an additional payment. Now, who pays that tax? It really much depends. It could be the importer. The company in China that sourced this good. And so the company will have to pay for the tax. Now then the company will think about it. Should I also increase the price when it is sold to the Chinese consumer in China? Because if they think that they can still secure a good consumer demand for that good, then they may raise the price a little bit or up to the maximum amount of the additional import tax that they pay. So it, they can actually transfer some of the increased cost to the final consumers. Mm. So therefore, the effect on a consumer will be an increase in the price that they pay. Okay. They may not be the one that directly pay for it, but they will experience a increase in
costs.
The cost of purchase and the cost of living may increase if this consumer were to buy imported goods.
Except from covering the fees of the transportation. Mm-hmm. So why countries, say, set the tariff for the other countries? What's the purpose behind that?
All right. Yeah, very interesting question on this. The purpose is that, let's talk about shoes, yeah? Since I use the example of shoes. In China, Chinese local producers also make shoes, yeah? And one of the reasons is therefore would be that China might want to protect their own local producers. Mm. And in order to discourage Chinese consumers to buy imported leather shoes, and so by raising the price that the consumers may feel as a result of this tariff, that is the import tax, so consumers will then have to now reconsider, should I buy a domestic producer, a Chinese-made, Chinese-produced shoes? And in so doing, domestic firms will have a market for selling their shoes, mm. and they can get better in making shoes. So to summarize it, is that by doing so, domestic production is protected. They can then expand their scale of production. And also, by doing so, theoretically, then the more they produce, there is this, we call it the economies of scale, a large production can lower the cost of production. And so each pair of shoes locally made can be brought down further. And hence, in the end, hopefully, Chinese consumers can buy a cheaper pair of locally made shoes and yet pretty good quality. And in the long term, Chinese firms, shoemakers, will be able to compete even with the Italian talent shoemakers because their cost is lower. They have experience learning by doing.
So essentially, the purpose of imposing a tariff is to protect and secure the internal market.
Yes.
So in the case of China and the U.S. tariff war, it's like the U.S. sets the tariff to China because they want to protect the same market of themselves. And they also try to reject some products from China, right?
Yes, yes. When the U.S. Decides to impose high tariff on imported goods, mainly Chinese goods, is one of the things is that they want to protect the domestic production. It's theoretically possible, but there are a lot of things to consider whether this really works or not in the end. Another thing is that in this modern world where production is actually, we call it in economics, it's being sliced into many stages, and different stages are being located in different parts of the world. When tariff is applied is sufficiently high enough, then a U.S. company, for example, who has an investment factory in China will now have to think, would they still want to use China as a production base if their final consumers are actually back in the U.S.? So in that way, perhaps the U.S. is thinking that they can actually get their investment, the U.S. investors, to relocate their factories back into the U.S. Not just the U.S. investors, perhaps any other investors that is targeting the U.S. as final consumers. So in that way, at least in principle, the U.S. is hoping to get an increase in foreign direct investment into the U.S. and that creates jobs to people.
then substantially the effect on the consumers, on an ordinary person, let's name it like this,
yeah,
is the higher costs on the international goods,
mm-hmm,
for example, for the US ones,
yeah,
and the ability to buy an internal good yeah, from like an internal market,
mm-hmm,
for a lower price.
Mm-hmm.
Are we talking about the protection of infant industry?
Yes, yes. I mean, in economics, there's literature on infant industry, you know. It's just like anybody, if you're a baby, you protect the baby so that the baby has time to grow, to learn how to walk, to learn how to talk, and subsequently to learn how to read before they go into university,
mm,
right, eventually. And so it's the same thing. If you think of that as an analogy and think of it into an infant industry, yeah, so you protect the industry, and hopefully then given time, they learn by doing it. And in order to do it, they need the market base. They need the consumer's demand to buy their goods, for them to learn to make it in the goods. And over time, they can perhaps excel in the industry. This is in principle Yeah. In history, there are many examples of successful case, infant industry argument, but there's also unsuccessful cases in the history as well.
Sure. Yeah. So when we're talking about the imposition of a tariff,
mm-hmm,
there are actually two ways why the tariff is imposed. It's either to help the internal market or to help an infant industry, right?
Yeah, that's right.
All right. So, and you also said that in the past, there were the successful examples,
yeah,
as well as unsuccessful.
Mm-hmm.
So could you tell us something about that?
Yes, of course. Yeah. The one I remember, which I often use that in our trade module, is a Brazilian computer.
Brazilian?
Yeah, computer made by Brazilian. So it's interesting, yeah? And if I remember correctly, this was it was not just a tariff, yeah? Brazil actually imposed a complete banning imported computers, yeah, into Brazil in order to protect their industry, yeah? And obviously, I don't think you use a Brazilian computer. It didn't
yeah,
work. It failed. It didn't work. Yeah. Perhaps I don't, you know, for those of us who would like to read a bit, I mean, you just checked it a bit on the internet, you will see the story. Yeah. So that was an unsuccessful case. Now, there are successful cases in the US where they protect their steel rail industry. The imposed tariff on steel imports from the Europe, and because the U.S. geographically is a large country, and it allows them to provide the industry for the steel railroad, you know, trains, railway,
yeah,
and so that was a successful case. So perhaps nearing to our modern time is the Chinese automotive mm-hmm, industry, car industry, especially we see there are many good brands, yeah, in China, and is able to compete with established international brand, the EV cars. And so China also apply a pretty significant high tariff to protect the local industry. I mean, that means the Chinese, when they want to buy imported cars, it will be a lot more expensive.
Oh, sure.
And so it was protected, but this tariff rate has been gradually reduced now. It does seem to be the case that Chinese has been successful and the Chinese automotive car.
Basically, there are two successful examples, like the bright ones. It's the U.S. Steel market and the Chinese EVs.
And the automotive cars. And perhaps if I add a little bit on this, you know, there is a certain criteria, certain conditions to be met for an infant industry protection argument. Perhaps I will just mention one, and that is that your domestic economy must have a sufficiently large market base for your local firms to practice learning and by making it available. But if the country has a very small market base, by protecting it for the sake of hoping that your infant industry will be matured in the long run, it's not going to be easy. If the country doesn't have a large consumer market base, yeah, I think that's a necessary condition.
Oh, Wei Heng, I do remember that you mentioned about the relocation of firms. Like, for example, if there is a high import tax, then some firms, for example, from China, would reconfigure their base and go to the other country. Can you say something about that?
Yeah, I did read some of this in the news that it was reported that even Chinese small firms, they are even considering to set up a factory in the US because their targeted market base is the US consumers, the US buyers. And so some of them even think that it's worth it to start a factory in the US. You know, starting a factory in an environment that is very pretty new to the firm is added cost. You know, you need to do some research where to start. And these are all costs. But given such anticipating such uncertainty over the high tariff rates imposed on Chinese exports to the US, some firms, even the Chinese firms, are thinking to relocate. In fact, some I think they have already started. So in other words, that originally their production base is in China, but now they are putting their production in the US. Yeah. And so what's the consequence as a result? Immediately, you can think of it as the employment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so normal people like us would like still get the job. There might be retrenchment, or perhaps they do not close the factory in China yet because they may think that perhaps such tariff hikes right now could be a short term. Mm-hmm. So it's perhaps very costly to shut down and in the future, a few years later, to reset up. So probably they won't shut down. But whether to shut down or not to shut down is a big decision as well. Perhaps I can mention a bit more about here is that uncertainty is the factor that businesses do not like at all because it actually they don't know what to do.
Yeah.
And by not knowing what to do, their plan in the medium term, in the long term, you know, how you define medium and long term is not the issue. It's that they will find that it's hard for them to make decisions for their business growth. Will they invest more in research and development on the particular product, or should they actually change the kind of product? Because they may think that now perhaps they would have to target different markets in the world, and the consumer preferences will be different. And the type of product that they will make may be different, and hence the way they design their product will be different as well. So this is real; it creates a huge uncertainty.
Yeah, sir. So you just mentioned about the uncertainty for firms themselves, but what about ordinary people? For example, if we're talking about the relocation of firms.
Mm-hmm.
When they relocate their factories to other countries, if we're talking, for example, about the Chinese case, Chinese people, they speak mostly Chinese language, right? This does make sense. And when the firm is relocated, for example, to Spain, and not many of Chinese workers from that company would agree to relocate to Spain. So here is, I'm talking about the employment issue for a firm as well as for the workers, because some of them would be afraid of going to another country.
Yes.
And the firm can be also challenged by the reduction in the labor force. So,
yes. Well, if a company moves to Spain, they will employ the locals in Spain to be the workers. And of course, employment in Spain may be increased, but there will be unemployment increase in China.
Yes.
And to pick up a new language, it takes time. And so the Chinese wouldn't have that advantage if it is relocating to another country. You know, I mean, the Chinese can apply and as well move to Spain, but then they will have a disadvantage in that. But having said that, the details is difficult. Yeah. If we really want to talk about the likely impact in general, we can anticipate such things to happen. But I mean, of course, it would be nice you can attend the lecture and, you know, to talk about specific factory and the kind of goods that it's being making and the kind of skills that is needed. Yeah. I mean, factory workers, perhaps you'll be thinking that they don't have to speak. They will just work, right? Yeah. But then is it worth for the company to apply a working visa for the Chinese to work in Spain? Or wouldn't it just be easier if the skills that they need is available in Spain, the local workers in Spain? Yes. Yeah.
So there is also an employment issue here.
Just now we have discussed about the influences that the US-China tariff war will have on the people's daily life and also the business in two countries. And even so, this dispute has existed for a very long time. But the term of tariff is actually very new to me. Because for me, it sounds like some new strategies adopted by the certain countries. So as an expert in economics, could you please introduce us with some similar cases in the history? And what can we learn from this by comparing the historical cases with current one?
Oh, yes. I mean, so far what I've been saying that, you know, unemployment, consumer have to pay a higher price for the good. It sounds very depressing, right?
Yeah.
It's like, well, the future is going to be bleak. But actually, this tariff war that we see currently, it is not something new. Yeah, tariff war actually is documented in history, and there are plenty different rounds of it. So if we look back in the history, then we will know this is not like a forever thing. By looking at history, yeah, there are many cases in history. One of it is the Trump administration. This is the second round. And then that means earlier, the first round was already some tariff hike.
Yeah.
But if we look back further down in the history, is in the 1930, the US has also applied high tariff rates. Yeah. And it is called the Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act. In 1930, more specifically June 1930. And it was aimed at protecting the American farmers. Yeah. And so that particular tariff hike, leads to raising the tariff on a vast range of goods. Yeah. And so that leads to retaliation measure. Yeah. From countries like Canada, France and Spain. Yeah, so it was a tariff war. I mean, China was not involved during that time. And perhaps the scale of it, it didn't spill over to the whole world, as of compared now, where Trump actually applied tariff to not just China,
to
almost every country, in the world. Those days that it was just targeting as more specific.
Mm-mm.
And, it made very much sense to do so because world in those days didn't really have that global supply chain. So the result of that high in the 1930s, was a sharp decline in global trade as a result, their trade. And, the record actually show US exports declined by 61%. That was pretty significant, right?
Yeah.
And those years were Great Depression, and actually deepening the economic crisis as a result of that tariff. Yeah. And that policy was seen, was widely perceived as a failure. So, and so it was reversed. So it abandoned. So there are plenty other interesting historical examples to look at. And another, perhaps more, a little bit more recent, in the 1960s, perhaps you can call it chicken, you know, chicken, the poultry that we eat, chick, and it's called chicken war. Yeah, interesting, yeah? Chicken war, yeah. So in the 1960s, at that, I think after the World War II, yeah, American chicken production increased a lot, and it floods the European market, and so poultry was cheap, that is imported from America. Mm-hmm. Now, European farmers was unable to compete, and so they lobbied their government for protection. Mm. Yeah. And so the European Economic Community at that time, EEC, imposed tariff on the US poultry imports. So, and then there is a retaliation from the United States on European goods, including like trucks, yeah, the vehicle, European exports of like trucks into America. So there's a retaliation. Yeah. So it's a tariff, tariff war, in a sense, is that retaliation measure. So these are examples. Yeah.
Well, actually, by imposing a tariff, country just buys itself some time, and essentially the tariff is nothing about the long run. It's more about like short-term change. And are we talking here about the monetary neutrality?
No, not really. I'm not expert in it, but I don't really think so. Yeah. Just now you mentioned about tariff, it's like, it's not going to be a long-term thing. Mm. However, yeah, the way, I mean, the things we have been talking about as if tariff is a really bad thing. Yeah. Mm. But, perhaps that ties in with, to say that it's free trade, the free, best. It's free trade. Free trading. That means there's no, no policy measures. Yeah, free trade. The best thing. No. Not necessarily free trade is the best thing. A simple explanation is that there are certain industries need to be protected because they are infant industry. And these are crucial. And you still want the domestic variety and things like that. You don't just throw your child into the a free market competition. And in fact, this was the US and the UK. They wanted the developing countries to open the market, like to tell free trade is the way for growth. Yeah. But if we look back into the history, like I have just looked at, is that they were also very protective, and they protect the domestic industry and in the, and giving them time to grow and to be able, to compete with the world. And they phase out the tariff in the end, and then they become a very successful producer. So should tariff be, is tariff really the bad thing?
Hmm.
Yeah. I think a short answer to it is maybe not.
Hmm.
But of course, there are other policies, there are other measures to so that it will be less distortionary. And instead of using tariff, you can have other way, like production subsidy and things like that. But I won't go into that detail, because if you take economics module, then that can be analyzed. But still, in short, then, is free trade completely the way forward for countries? Perhaps it's not.
I was wondering, because so we know that it is not good for a country to open their markets completely, and it's also not good for them to fully protect their country, to block them from the other country. So is there any optimal rate of the, you know, the tax for the offer country.
Yeah.
Could we just take the China, for example?
Mm-hmm. Do you mean the, you mean like if we look at the Chinese automotive market? Yes. Yeah. And not all types of industry, depending on the country's endowment. You wouldn't expect that a small country adopting an infant industry protection on the automotive industry. Imagine a tiny country with a small population, and the government or the country would have the hope or dream to develop their automotive industry so that it will become world competitive in the long run. Perhaps that's not so feasible because you have, and you protect it, but you have a very limited market base for the car maker to learn by doing. Yeah. And so, then it's not in this way, it won't work. So it's very much based on look at the country, the endowment, where it's being located, the climate, the weather, and things like this. It's very complicated. I don't think it's not good to have just simple rule to generalize a policy. Yeah.
Mm.
And so even the U.S. applied high tariff rates on Japan auto. Japan is a world-class car makers.
Mm-hmm.
Even more recently, say in 1980s, the U.S. imposed 100% tariff rate. So our current modern day over 100% again is really nothing new. Yeah, and so the U.S. apply 100% tariff on Japanese goods and targeting automobiles. And so it was meant to punish Japan for failing to comply with some semiconductor trade agreement. Yeah. And so Japan did not retaliate, you know, in the history. But that's a long story to look into. So thinking about this, Japan continued to play an important part in the world supply of automotive cars.
We have just discussed something about the historical cases of tariff war. I have seen some comments, like they comment about on the U.S. and China tariff war, saying that it is a symbol of the globalization. So I was wondering, what's your comment on that?
Well, we all know that both the U.S. and China are large. They are large consumers. The U.S. probably consume about one third of the world consumption. Then Chinese also consumes a lot, like 18 or close to 20% of the world consumption. So imagine that these two countries, their consumers face an increase in the prices, and this is logically we will think that they may reduce the demand. And if they reduce the demand in buying things, firms will have to reduce the production.
Yeah.
And by doing so, the economic activity will be less a little bit, and hence less jobs, lower GDP. And what does it more mean? It does mean a slowdown in the global world economy, if not recession, increase in price and things. So perhaps then some will be thinking that is the world less connected? Does that mean, you know, supply chain firms cannot be really making lots of things? Is the world become less connected, and hence, is it the world become deglobalization? But I'm actually not pessimistic, because the world, countries do not just connect with each other through production of goods, not buying and exporting, importing. This is part of it, but there are other ways as well. We are very much connected through the internet, information sharing, and interaction with people. Even, you know, where we are sitting, when you hear this podcast, you don't have to come to me in person to talk about it, right?
Yeah.
So likewise, crossing countries interaction can still be kept. And as we see in the history, these are temporary. And so I'm optimistic about it. And perhaps this gives us a little time, a space, some space to contemplate things. What should we be doing? Yeah. Nothing is actually very problematic in life and in the world. And also, you know, if we look into what we see, China giving visa-free entrance to China, that is actually increase in connectivity, at least regionally. And so these are good things. And businesses will be able to travel visa-free, and that is a reduction in cost. And so the world perhaps is less connected due to that tariff, but then it gets increased connection in other parts of the world.
Okay.
And so it's not a bad thing at all. Yeah. And of course, you also hear about the just recently about higher education. America is thinking of not granting student visa to students from China, things like that. Is there a way out to it? And I am very optimistic there will be a way out because interaction, understanding, increase in understanding and for knowledge exchange can be done remotely, perhaps. Not fully, not a perfect substitute, but there is a way out to increase in understanding in a very creative way. I think everybody can be very creative if we have a good intention. So it's not a pessimistic future.
It's about probably creativity. It's just a new trend.
That's right. People can be even more resilient to obstacles. There's always a positive side to everything.
Of course. Yeah. And it actually teaches us to look critically at the problem, right?
Yeah. That's right.
All right. Then thank you very much for the case with the like US-China tariff.
Thank you.
What about listeners at home? What about non-economic students? What about non-economists at all for students from...
me, because I'm from international communication studies. I feel like trade war is, have no relationship with my daily life. So we were wondering, why should us, non-economics, should care about the tariff war and care about the global economic decisions?
So, my response to this is whether you're an economist or an economic student, everybody is involved in economic activity.
Yeah.
The fact that you buy things, the fact that you work, you are involved on a day-to-day basis in economic activity. And why should you care about it? Of course, you will know that the price of goods that you pay for imported goods will be increased, and you probably increase in uncertainty what kind of training that you would like to invest for the next few years in order that you get a good job and stay employed, you know. And this tariff war, it changes the relative cost and price, if I may use some economics term, because it will change a firm's behavior to some extent.
Yeah.
It changes consumers, their decision. And so it affects every one of us. Economics really is actually day-to-day thing. It's very much common sense.
But so now we do understand why people that are not really connected to economics should care. Then the other question for the students would be, well, how should they read the news about the tariff war? What points probably should they pay the most attention to?
When they read the news, of course, some news need to be concise. So there will be missing link in the explanation, and probably then they will find that they can't follow. It is not just about non-economic student. Even economists, even economic students will not be able to follow when there is some missing line in the reasoning and explanation to the next point, for example. And so for all of us, whether you're economic students or a non-economic students, let's apply our logical thinking. If there is a missing link, you can, you know, put the questions on a piece of paper and then you can search further in the internet. Perhaps you can use your AI tool to help you. They can guide you a little bit and slowly you can see making sense of it. And of course, I hope today's session help clarify some of the doubts as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
definitely.
I hope so. Yeah.
Yes, then. Yeah.
Nothing complicated, actually, in understanding economics reasoning. It's just common sense, logical thinking, and every one of us has it. Once you show interest in it, and also do not be discouraged when you read news or even articles, economics article explain it. That's because sometimes it's not the reader's fault. It's not their weakness. Perhaps it is the author's, given the limited number of words they can put in, and they have to be more concise so they don't explain in too detail. So just don't be discouraged and have a discussion, jot down, you know, let's say for non-economic students as well as economic students. Yeah. Just put it some notes and try to, you know, having some discussion with friends and to see what's the implication.
And probably just try to build the logical flow, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Just
the logical
flow. To find this logical kind of chain.
Exactly.
Between the ideas.
Yeah. That's right.
All right.
Don't skip those logical flow in processing your understanding.
Mm. Sure thing.
Yeah.
Well, then, thank you very much, Wai Heng, for such a fruitful discussion. It was a pleasure to discuss this topic with you.
Yeah. Thank you very much for inviting me. Thank you, Daniel and Curtin. Yeah, thank you very much. I enjoyed this session as well.
We have learned a lot today. Thank you.
Yeah.